Machu.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
We'll start in a minute or so.
Okay.
I'm curious, did you take a look at that video yet?
Yes. Tony got bored with it, but it was okay.
I got bored with it also, but
Well, I mean, the essence is in the name, and I mean, we knew the gematria was going to work out. I mean, it's something we knew, So, after the first few examples, you knew that it was going to follow the same pattern. So,
right.
but I think someone who didn't really have the revelation and the idea of gematria in Hebrew letters, it would really mean something to them.
Actually, it doesn't.
You think not? I was fascinated way back years ago when I saw that, different words. I mean, I knew about the gematria, but I didn't realize that words that had the same gematria number were related in some way. And then the idea came later that you could permutate a word and get a new word, and that would also be related. So it was like building little levels upon level of adding to the meaning of gematria. So
Correct.
I think it's step by step with everybody.
The reason I said that it doesn't really work that people have their eyes opened by things like this is not what I say. It's what my teachers have always said. Just read the Bible, and 3 days after the parting of the sea, people have forgotten. And there are many, many stories like that, throughout the 40 years. There's every few years, every few months, there's people forget the miracles. And so you have your eyes opened by something like that video, but then you forget it.
It's true. I guess that's why we keep doing the same cycle over and over with the holidays and everything, So you have to have it repeated.
Yes. Well,
I
we have some
watched a
other
video.
people who've Go ahead.
I watched the video and I thought it was awesome.
It is awesome, except that we forget it. And also, from my perspective, the producers were approaching things wrong. They were saying, that this proves that the Torah was written by a creator, by a super being. But the reality is we don't even have to spend the money on the super colliders or any of the other techno scientific advancements, because it's all in the Torah. That's my perspective on it. And that we could use that money and those resources to remove poverty from the world.
Well, that's a
Although
very good.
I know from what the Torah tells us that there will always be poverty because it serves a purpose.
Right.
But it's relative values to poverty. It doesn't have to be that people are hungry. There will always be poor people to provide an opportunity for rich people to save themselves from their wealth.
Right.
That's what the Torah. That's what the Torah teaches us. We'll start the class in about 1 minute for those of you who have arrived. Please join me in saying the Ana Bekoach. Ana Bekoach, Gedulat Shemincha, Tatir Tzerura. Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tat Sadi. Tzerunat. Amcha Sadveinu Zahareinu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun. The letter Kuf that created the constellation Pisces, Dagim, the fishes, and the Gimel that created the planet Jupiter, the planet Tzedek, the planet of righteousness. The translation of the two letters, one is a camel and one is a monkey. And I'll leave you to contemplate the meaning of that within the frame of the fishes. Na gibor dor sheyehudcha kevavat shamrem. Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. The sequence Yud Kaf Shin is a healing sequence that allows us to take any part of our body that needs healing back to its stem cell state, where it will be rejuvenated, where it will be cleansed, where it will be healed, and then return it to the body, where it will again do its job as it was created to do in its newly pristine recreated state. Parchem tacharem rachamei sitkatcha tamid gamlem betet resh tzadi taf gimel. Chasin kadosh birotuvcha nael adatach het kuf bet tet nunayin. Yachid ge'e lamcha penei zokre kidushatach yud gimel lamed pei zayin kuf. Shavatenu kabel ushma tziakatenu yodea talumot shin kufav tzari yudtaf. We're now going to say four verses from the Tanakh. And the reason we say these verses, it connects us to the energy of last year where we started the process but have not yet completed it. And we want to complete it. We want to bring a peace, a ceasefire to the north as well as to the south. But we're also concerned that we might fall back and lose what we have gained this past year. So we say this verse from Samuel Bet, chapter 7, verse 10. Wusamti makom liyami li Yisrael untati vishakan tachta vilo yirgaz od vilo yosifu v'nei avlal anoto ka'asher barishona. And now we're going to say three verses that connect us to the energy of this year, Tavshin Ayin He. This year that we may have the ability to create the certainty of the removal of the angel of death. We start with Job chapter 7, verse 19. Kamalo tishemi meni lo tarpeni ad bili ruki. And then it's 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23. Uru udu mikol hamachavuiyam asher yidchabe sham wishavtem elai el nachon v'halachti idchem v'chayayim yeshno v'aretz v'chipasti oto b'kol alfei Yehuda. And the third verse also comes from Job, chapter 20, verse 7. Kegelo lanetzach yovedo roav yom ruayo. We're reading a verse from the Zohar, from the Parashat Tetzaveh, verse 8, or Pasuk 8. When we're starting out with the Lashem Yehud to align our consciousness with the unity of Yud-Heh with the Vav-Heh, the unity of Zeranpin and Malchut, and the unity of male and female. Hashem Yehud Kut Shabarichu Shkinte B'Dchilu Urchimu U'Dchilu Le'akta Hashem Yud-Ke B'Vav-Ke B'Yehuda Shelim B'Shem Kol Yisrael. Raza kadma ayod nekuda kadma adekaima al tesham samchin desamchin la ue inun kaimin liarba sitre alma Kima disofa demachashava nekuda batra'a kaima le'arba sitre alma bar dehai dekar v'hi nukba. The first secret is the yud of the Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, which is the first point, namely Chachma, which stands upon nine pillars that support it. They are stationed to the four directions of the world, south, north, east, and west, which are the three columns and Malchut. Similarly, the end of thought, the last point, which is Malchut, stands to the four directions of the world, which are south, north, east, and west, the three columns and Malchut that receives them. They are all equal, one to the other, except that the upper point, which is Yud of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, is male, and the last point, which is Malchut, is female. My commentary. We learn from this pasuk that male is equal to female, and female is equal to male, and all 10 sephirot are equal to each other, and have both male and female within them. Sometimes male will act as female, and sometimes female will act as male, and that is the appropriate way for the creation. All is relative. All is equal. Does anyone have any questions? Today's class is continuing the preparation for the many holidays and connections that are available for us and during the next 90 days. That run from the Zion Adar, which starts Wednesday night, until Shavuot is a 90-day period that includes Purim. It includes the various special readings from the Torah on Shabbat, the Parah Adumla, Amalek, and the HaChodesh. It includes the first 14 days of Nisan, which is an opportunity to take control of the astrological influences for the next 12 months. It includes Pesach. It includes the counting of the Omer. It includes Lag BaOmer. It includes second Pesach, Pesach Sheni. It includes Shavuot. And people look at this as separate items, and they are not separate. They are all connected. They all serve part of the same purpose, which is to remove the illusion from our consciousness. We're going to prepare that. We're going to learn about that over these next 3 months. But we're going to understand it in a larger way today. You can find the handout on any Yeshem website page. On the right side, under the two pictures, you'll find various links. The name form link, the Bible, verses from the Bible link, and a link that says unique astrological events. If you click on that link, when you open it up, it'll start out with the month of Elul. Scroll down until you reach the month of Adar. And under that, you will see a link. Last week, we discussed the Shekelim, the action of making atonement for our souls, and we spent a good period of time explaining that. And that's available, and if you haven't heard that recording or read that handout, I recommend that you do that, which is the link above the month of Adar. Because the announcement was made in the synagogues, make your donation to the temple, but it's really talking about your atonement, your at-one-ment. If you look at the English word atonement, it is the way of returning your soul to be part of the collective soul of Israel. That's the purpose of the half shekel donation. So if you're interested in that, please send me an email to request it, and we can understand it. There is a donation fee for that because of the cost of the silver involved in that. It is $17, which lets you connect to the consciousness of goodness, because the number 17 is the gematria of the word tov in Hebrew, which means good. But the link underneath the month of Adar is the first class, and last week we started that class. So when you open it up, you'll need to scroll down to where it says, it's about an inch down on the page. It says Zion Adar, or the Hilulah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is where we are starting today's handout and today's class. Moshe, well, let me explain that the 7th of Adar is the birth date and the Hilulah of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, our teacher. It starts Wednesday night. And on Wednesday nights, we normally have at 7 p.m. a class on questions and answers. And we will do so. But we will also have a class that will start at 11 p.m. Wednesday night. That will be an all-night study to the extent that I am capable and can keep my eyes open. An all-night study connecting to the energy of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's highly recommended that we utilize people of this stature who did not die to help us develop the consciousness of removing the angel of death. We will also include in this reading section 2 of Tetzaveh in the Zohar, and you will find that section to be rather enlightening, because it deals with the tetragrammaton. It deals with the four letters, both their shapes and their vowels. You're going to find it very illuminating. The Zohar that I read this morning comes from that, section. Beginning the class. Moshe was born on the seventh day of Adar. He also departed on the same day, and tradition indicates that he departed exactly 120 years to the minute after his birth. Why did he leave on this day? There are a number of reasons that Moshe left on this day. One of the significant reasons has to do with the fact that the 7th of Adar is 37 days after Rosh Chodesh Shvat. We are taught that Moshe Rabbeinu started to admonish the children of Israel on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. That is the Sefer Devarim of the Torah. That is all of the parashiyot of the book of Deuteronomy. What is the significance of the number 37, and how does it relate to admonishment? And I didn't write this, but we need to understand. I did write it. It says, admonishment is an important mitzvah. Did you know that it's a mitzvah to tell people off, to correct people's actions? There's just two requirements to be able to do that mitzvah properly. Do it improperly, without the proper consciousness, and you create more chaos in the world with this mitzvah of admonishment. Moshe waited 40 years to admonish the children of Israel. They were always questioning him throughout those 40 years. They were questioning him. They were pushing his leadership, challenging his leadership. Moses didn't say anything. He didn't admonishment. He didn't tell them they were wrong until the last 37 days of his life. Why did he admonish them then? Because he had gone through his life. He had gone through his innate investigation into himself. Because whenever someone challenged Moshe, and for us to learn from this, whenever someone challenged Moshe, Moshe was not sure if he was the cause. After all, the person challenging him was his mirror. Most of us don't pay attention to that. The person that gives us a hard time, the person that we feel uncomfortable with, that we just don't understand why they do what they do, we just look at it as, oh, it's them. But Moses didn't do that because he knew that that person is his mirror. And he investigated within himself for 40 years. He always questioned, am I the cause? Am I the one causing this person to challenge me? Maybe they're right. Maybe I'm doing this incorrectly. And it was only after 40 years of searching himself that he decided that it wasn't him, it was the people. And he admonished them on their behavior, our behavior. That's the book of Deuteronomy. And it's a major lesson for us to learn, both about Moshe Rabbeinu and what to do about ourselves. Admonishment is an important mitzvah. Why? When one sees a member of the tribe doing something that according to the halakha is incorrect, they need to attempt to stop the person without coercion from doing this incorrect act. Failure to do so indicates acceptance of the action as correct. And some of the chaos attributable to this act manifests in your life when you do not admonish. I don't remember the specific halakha, but I remember I was visiting a city and I was in a synagogue and doing some study with some people. And it was brought up, a particular halakha that I don't follow. Now, why don't I have... I knew about the halakha. I don't remember the subject, so I apologize for that. But I knew about the halakha. I just didn't feel that it was correct, because I had read in the Zohar a different way, a different halakha. But the person who loved me, a person who felt strongly that the halakha was correct, had the need to admonish me. It didn't change my actions. But I could feel the love he felt for me, the love of one human being for another. I could feel the pain he was feeling when I did what he thought was incorrect. This is the way admonishment is supposed to be administered. We are supposed to say, you're doing wrong. Please reconsider your action. There's no coercion in that statement. There's no argument in that statement. There's, I perceive the world this way. You perceive the world that way. And please consider that you're doing it incorrectly. And then it's up to me, having heard the admonishment, to evaluate and choose. What is the person doing by admonishing, which is very difficult to do? Most people find it difficult to tell another, you're wrong. To tell another in this way, consider changing your ways. What is the purpose of doing this admonishment? If you do not admonish, then you're guilty. Just as the person making the error, or what is in your opinion the error, that person is creating chaos in their life if, in truth, their action is an error. So we have to keep in mind all things are relative. So it may be appropriate for the person to do the action and not appropriate for you to do the action. But ultimately, if the action is inappropriate, the chaos that develops from that applies to the person doing it. Of course, we all understand cause and effect. But some of that chaos applies to you if you saw that it's wrong and do not say anything. If you do not admonish, that chaos attaches itself to you, some aspect of it. And some of the sages say it's even a greater amount than the person's own actions. Continuing to read, 37 is the gematria of the word Hevel, which is the son of Adam. Hevel is spelled Hey Bet Lamed. Hevel means breath. Hevel means vanities. Remember Vanity of Vanities and all of that from the book of Kohelet? 37 is a hint to the seven lower sephirot of this physical world. How does that arrive? Reverse the letters. Instead of spelling Hevel, Hey Bet Lamed, spell it Hey Lamed Bet. Halev, the heart. Another explanation of the number 37 is it relates to the concealed part of the name of Hashem at the level of Bina. Hashem's name at the level of Bina has a gematria of 63. It's spelled with 10 letters. Yud Vav Dalet. Hey Yud. Vav Aleph Vav. Hey Yud. When we subtract the original letters of the Tetragrammaton, 26, we're left with 37. 37 represents the concealed part of Bina. This is why Moshe took 37 days to teach the book of Deuteronomy to the nation of Israel. In my opinion, this is the reason why the period of time that we are entering starts on the 7th of Adar. Hevel, breath, vanities hints at the idea of the concealment associated with the holiday of Purim, and we will talk about that shortly. Parashah Tetzaveh, which is the parashah this coming Shabbat. The reading of Tetzaveh, like Terumah, is part of the cure before the disease. The disease is the building of the golden calf. The disease is idol worship. The cure is the Mishkan and the priests, including their garments, who work and serve in the Mishkan. The reading of Tetzaveh on a physical level describes the four garments of the priests along with the eight garments of the high priest called the Kohen Gadol. You may have heard the secular phrase that comes out of Hawaii, the Big Kahuna. The Big Kahuna comes from the Hebrew phrase Kohen Gadol. Each of these garments is being worn by the high priest, causing the cleansing of certain negative actions that were done by various sins performed by everyday people. Do you think a tikkun can ever again be that easy? Let me explain what this question actually implies. Almost everyone does some aspect of idol worship at one time or another in their life. After all, idol worship is being unable to let go of some physical item in favor of doing your spiritual work. An example is money. People go to work to earn money. At one time or another, they, the people, go to earn money instead of doing their spiritual work. Perhaps it is something they do not realize at that moment, yet it is still considered building an idol. In the days of the temple, each time the high priest put on the ephod, the vest which was worn over his robe and tunic, any actions of idol worship that had come into existence since the last time he wore the ephod was cleansed. Meaning the person never even realized he was building an idol when his addiction idol was removed. Today we have to consciously decide to let go of our addiction to the idols we build. This is what we lost when the temple was destroyed, among other things. And we truly do not even know that we are missing it. How sad. That's what Kabbalah brings us, this knowledge, or at least this information that we can choose to make knowledge. We have tools that remove idol worship just as easily as the wearing of the ephod by the Kohen Gadol. What is it? It's the Zohar. It's the Hebrew letters in the Aramaic of the Zohar. We do not have to go through the addiction. We just have to realize that we built the idol and then use the Hebrew letters to transform that addiction into something more positive. When speaking about missing something, there is a truly remarkable energy that is missing from the parasha of Tetzaveh. That is the energy of the name of Moshe. And if the name is missing, then that energy is missing. And if that energy is missing, Moshe isn't there. What is the purpose of not having Moshe there? The Midrash explains that the only parasha where the name Moshe does not appear is Tetzaveh. From the moment he is introduced in the Torah in the parasha of Shemot until the final parasha of the Torah, Zot Bracha, Moshe appears in 41 of the last 42 parashiot of the Torah. He is missing in the eighth parasha of his appearance. As students of Kabbalah, we should recognize the energy of these numbers. 42 is the energy of the Ana B'Koach, the energy of creation. 41 spells the mother Im, or the word Im, or meaning mother, which is also known as the Sefirah Binah. Moshe is said to inhabit the non-Sefirah Dat, but Dat is the integration of Chachma and Bina. Moshe connects us to the upper worlds, to the upper Sefirot. Eight connects us to the upper worlds, to the upper Sefirot, to Bina. If Moses is missing, how do we get to those upper Sefirot? So why is Moshe missing? Or is he truly missing? The Midrash explains that after the sin of the golden calf, Moshe made a conditional statement. If you destroy the children of Israel, even if you rebuild the nation from me, take my name out of the book that you have written, the Torah. According to the Midrash, all states of righteous people are manifested, since a righteous person always does what is right. It may sound like a curse, but it is truly a blessing. Since, in my opinion, this statement of both Moshe and Hashem was manifested in one of the earth plane dimensions, and all of the Torahs are the same throughout all of the earth plane dimensions, Moshe was removed in the Torah, the Parasha of Tetzaveh. In Kabbalah, we are taught the spiritual truth that less is more. When the name Moshe does not appear, more of his energy, his essence, is available to us. Since this reading of Tetzaveh is always Shabbat Zachor, the Shabbat of memory, the Shabbat of maleness, the Shabbat dealing with Amalek, this additional aspect of the energy of Moshe is made available to us. Tetzaveh is not read during leap years on Shabbat Zachor, but it's the week before. It is connected. Missing Moshe gives us the opportunity to have more of Moshe's energy, which we need to help offset the energy of Amalek. Remember, the halakha says that the maftir of Shabbat Zachor, which is a reminder of what Amalek did to us on the way, should be heard by every man, by every woman, and by every child of the current generation of the children of Israel. This additional energy of Moshe becomes available when we need it. To assist us in our preparation for the holiday of Purim, which is necessary for us to remove the doubts. We'll explain this below. Remove doubts that we all experience in order to manifest the energy of freedom associated with Pesach and with the Seder. Always remember that the energy of Pesach is the same as the energy of Shavuot, including the counting of the Omer. Shavuot's essence is Bila Hamavet LaNetzach, swallowing death forever. From all of this logic, We need the parasha of Tetzaveh with the missing Moshe in order to achieve the consciousness of removing death, which is the secret of mind over matter. May we all experience this, at least at the seed level of this Shabbat. Remember, seeds grow into trees. Perhaps this year, even the tree of life. Let's go into Shabbat Zachor a little bit deeper. Shabbat Zachor is the second of the four special Shabbatot leading up to the holiday of Pesach. 2 weeks ago, or last week, was Shabbat Shechalim, which we discussed in Parashat Truma. Shabbat Zachor is a reminder to read the special three-verse maftir describing the war against Amalek on this Shabbat, Shabbat Zachor. Above, we explained why it is read with this parasha. Now let us truly understand why this parasha of Tetzaveh, the maftir of Zachor, the haftorah of the war against Amalek, all are required listening prior to the holiday of Purim. Purim is a word that translates as chance. Its actual meaning is lots, which is, in our generation, would be called dice, or probably the game of dice known as craps. Please look at how our language hints to us about the energy of things that we do not pay attention. To understand this connection directly, please follow the logic expressed next. Amalek, the nation, has a gematria of 240 in the Hebrew language. The Hebrew word safek, translates as doubt, also has a gematria of 240. The city name Los Angeles, when spelled in Hebrew, also has a gematria of 240. These three words are connected through the essence of doubt. The nation of Amalek is the essence of doubt, even a channel to us for the energy of doubt. This is why Hashem is at war with Amalek throughout every generation, since the essence of Hashem is certainty, while the opposite of Hashem is Amalek, the channel for doubt. What is Los Angeles known for, famous throughout the world? Hollywood. What is the energy of Hollywood and the entertainment industry? They create illusion just as doubt creates illusion. This is why Los Angeles, Hollywood, has this industry called entertainment that is famous throughout the world. What is your city famous for? What is its energy? This will hint to you about an aspect of your personal tikkun. You live in that city for a reason. I was born in Los Angeles. I lived in Los Angeles until I was 63 years old. And then I left. It took me 63 years to grow past and through my connection to the energy of doubt. My children left the city earlier than that because their doubt, their connection to doubt was of shorter duration. They had cleansed much of the doubt in their earlier lifetimes. This also applies to why you live where you live. And when you feel the need to move, because the energy is different for you, it's not the same city you grew up in or live in, it's an indication that it's time, that the energy that caused you to be in that city has left. You have achieved that portion of your tikkun. Continuing, what is wrong with having doubts? So what if it is the opposite of Hashem's energy? All of us have doubts, so what is wrong with that? Doubts are human, aren't they? Didn't you have doubts before you got married to the person you married? Didn't you have doubts before you took the job that you're working at? It's human to have doubts. What's wrong with it? Yes, it is human. But we did not come to this world to remain human. We are in this world to grow spiritually to a level that is beyond human, that is beyond even the angels. We are in this world to become closer to the divine. Some say we are in this world to become divine. That level is called mind over matter. In order to manifest mind over matter, we have to have certainty that we can do that. It is not that we will see ourselves doing some mind over matter effect, and then we will know that we can do it. We must know that we can do it in order to do it. This is why it is war with Amalek. It is an aspect of this, his mercy, to teach us what we must do. That is to grow to the consciousness of mind over matter. And the first step is to remove doubts. To realize and perceive the world not as luck or chance, but as strict cause and effect. Even if we cannot perceive the cause, we must know that there is cause that comes from the spiritual world that we cannot perceive. This is the energy in those three verses of the Maftir of Shabbat Zachor. The holiday of Purim. One aspect of the holiday of Purim is reversal. When things look like they are going to go one way and then they are reversed by the circumstances, this is called reversal. In a football game, the team is marching down the field in the final minutes and it looks like they will score the winning touchdown. When the star halfback fumbles the ball and it is picked up by the defense who races back upfield and scores a touchdown that clinches the game. This is the energy of reversal. Purim, as we will discuss, is all about reversal. Freedom is all about reversal, as we will see when we discuss Pesach. Even the Omer and Shavuot is all about reversal. The holiday of Purim starts with the fast of Esther, which this year occurs on March 4th. It is a sunrise to sunset fast. Many people teach that the fast of Esther is done to help celebrate the holiday of Purim. After all, the scroll of Esther, which tells the story of Purim, describes a three-day fast, which Esther requested of the nation in those days. Kabbalah teaches that there is never an action done due to a historical event. All of the actions done around our holidays are done to increase our connection to energy. The fast of Esther is ended after the reading of the Megillah Esther, which starts as soon after sundown as possible. The fast of Esther is a spiritual cleansing in preparation to receive the energy of certainty that we get from the reading of the Megillah, Esther. Megillah means scroll. Esther is the name of the heroine. That is why we do not end the fast until after the reading of the scroll, in order to directly connect the cleansing of doubts to the receiving of the energy of certainty. The scroll of Esther is actually called Megillat Esther. When we look at the Shorashim, the roots of these words, Megillat and Esther, we find that this phrase means the revelation of the concealed. The name of the holiday is Purim, which means lots. What is a lot, and what is the plural meaning of lots? To understand the meaning, the energy of Purim, we need to understand the meaning of lots. The word lot is referring to the rolling of dice. The word lot is referring to chance, something which is totally false. The Midrash teaches that the infamous villain Haman rolled dice to determine the best astrological day to kill the nation, the children of Israel. The day turned out to be the 14th day of Adar, according to astrological rules and the laws of chance. Let's take a moment to discuss the laws of chance. The Hebrew word is Goral, spelled Gimel Vav Resh Lamed. The gematria of Goral is 239, which when added to the Kolel of 1 equals 240. The same as the gematria of the nation of Amalek and the Hebrew word Safek, doubts. In scientific language, lots follow the laws of probability. These laws are said by science to operate as the cause of the motion of subatomic particles. These are connected to the uncertainty principle, theory of modern science. This principle will be changed since it is not valid across all dimensions. At least that's my opinion. Hashem is certainty. Hashem knows where every electron is spinning. The laws of chance, specified by the laws of probability, are not complete and will be changed. We will eventually learn where every electron is located, and how to return it to its home atom, where it was originally stolen, where it was originally taken from. In spirituality, there are mechanisms called goralot. These mechanisms work by asking the question of the universe, and then turning to a page in the Tanakh, or the Talmud, or some of the other holy spiritual writings. Those people who follow the Chabad system turn to the writings and books of the Rebbe and use that as their method for answering their questions. Then the writing on that particular page does answer the questions. There are also books of Goralot that use a particular number to connect to a paragraph, and with that number to answer your questions. In all cases, the Goralot work because there is never chance in any aspect of creation. The Torah begins by saying Bereshit, not Bareshit. This is to show us that the creation is continuous, yet discrete. What this means is each instant the universe is recreated, balancing the consciousness of all human beings and their various desires to fit within the physical laws of this particular universe. In reality, everything is known and everything is preordained within the laws of each particular world, universe, or dimension. There are no doubts. There can be no doubts. There never is chance. Even miracles follow a particular set of natural laws that apply to miracles. Yet there is free choice as to what universe we will all choose to be within. Thus, in the present universe, there can be uncertainty and doubts, the purpose of which is for us to push past and reveal the light of the Creator. Learn the process of the creation by realizing that there is no uncertainty or doubts. There is only perfection and certainty. The true purpose of the reading of the Megillah is to connect to the energy of certainty and to protect ourselves from falling to the energy of doubt in order to connect to certainty. And avoid doubt, it is necessary for people to reveal the concealed. What is the revelation of the concealed? It is Hashem. Look through the illusion to see Hashem working behind the scenes. Hashem has chosen to conceal himself in our world. He must be revealed by our actions. The name of Hashem does not appear in the scroll of Esther. When we read the surface level of the scroll and know that Hashem was active in all aspects of the miracle of Purim, both the mundane and the holy aspects, we connect to the energy of certainty. Why does Hashem choose to conceal himself? In earlier generations, Hashem interacted directly with our forefathers and the prophets. Yet as our actions become more and more negative, Hashem chose to remove himself and conceal himself in our world. Yet this is a false explanation. It is easier to understand using a metaphor of a parent and a child. The parent helps the child learn to walk by holding him up and making sure the child is aware of this help. Then, as the child gains a greater ability to walk, the parent stops holding him and watches him walk. The child might turn around and be comforted by the appearance of the parent watching him walk. This gives the child confidence, so that eventually the parent goes into the other room, concealing himself from the child. This is how a child becomes an adult and learns to do things for himself. This is the purpose of our world. We are being given the power of creation and must become wise in its use, or become an adult and not a child, so that one day we might also become a parent of our own child. This is actually the reason Hashem has concealed himself. We should no longer need to see him to have the confidence to use the powers of creation. He has given us these powers of creation. The Megillat Esther helps us reach this goal. Costumes and parties. It is a minhag, a custom, to dress in costumes during the reading. What is the connection to a costume and the holiday of Purim? Essentially, it relates to revealing the concealed. Where was Hashem during the events? Where is Hashem in our lives today? Hashem is concealed. Hashem is in costume. So we emulate Hashem and become someone or something that can be revealed, that as we hope, Hashem will reveal himself and manifest Mashiach in our lives, in our time, and in our world. There is also a minhag, accustomed to drink and become intoxicated on Purim. Because we are supposed to reach an elevated state of consciousness, where we cannot tell the difference between the two phrases, bless Hashem, bless Haman, and curse Mordechai. No, I did not write that incorrectly. This elevated state of consciousness is one where we are able to see that curses or negativity is also a tool of Hashem. It is part of the plan of creation that negativity exists and be utilized by mankind, not to harm, but to benefit. I bless you and curse you with this consciousness so that you will understand this paragraph on Purim. Here is a hint. A blessing uses words. A curse uses words. What is the difference? Our time is up. We will return to this section of the page next week. I hope you will join us. It will be starting at 10:30 West Coast time, Monday at 7 o'clock West Coast time. We will be teaching about the Hebrew letter Kuf, the Kuf that created the planet or the constellation Dagim, the fishes, the Kuf that means monkey, the Kuf that is very integrated, the Kuf that feeds the negative system as a double agent. We will learn about consciousness this next week as we prepare for the reading of the Megillah Esther, for the revelation of the concealed. Tuesday, we will have a class at 7 p.m. in advanced reincarnation. Wednesday, as we said, we will have questions and answers at 7 p.m., and I hope you will send some questions to be answered, either by appearing in the conference call or sending the questions by email. At 11 o'clock Wednesday night, we begin our all-night study, and I hope you'll join us for that. Thursday night at 7 o'clock, we will complete, if we have not finished, the second section of the Parasha of Tetzaveh, which we will hear read in the synagogue on Saturday morning. We will search for Moshe in Tetzaveh. We will not find him, but he is there supporting us, the revelation of the concealed. Next Saturday night, we will have a Zohar class at 7 p.m. as well. And next Sunday morning, we'll do further preparation for Purim. But keep in mind, the 7th of Adar, Purim, the reading of Amalek, the reading of Para Aduma, the reading of a Chachodesh, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the 14 days of Nisan, Passover, the splitting of the sea on the seventh day, the Seder, the counting of the Omer, Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach, Lagba Omer. And Shavuot, as well as Rosh Chodesh Sivan. These are all interrelated, interconnected. And if you perceive them as separated, you're making a big mistake. I wish you all a beautiful week, and I ask if there are any further questions. Have a beautiful week. Shalom to all.
Okay, thank you.